Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Tet. Now, we mentioned before this new idea of Rebbe. When did we do that? We did that yesterday when Rava claimed that we don't need a posik to be matir, to aser the erva, right? So we said that yes, the Mishnah indeed, as Rav Ashi pointed out, is mashma. This. I'm sorry for going over it, but I know that they're not hard. There's no issue here is hard. It's just complicated because we have so many different approaches. And because of that, it's kedai to do a little bit repetition so that we constantly bring ourselves up to date. Usually I don't do it because we don't get into so many things to have to keep in mind. So what we said before was that according to Rava, the idea is that there's no basis for ever thinking that I should be miyabim in erva, and therefore Alea only came to teach me the din of the tsar, right? So we looked at the Mishnah, and Rav Ashi said, yeah, actually, if you look at the Mishnah never says that these 15 women are potter from yibum. It only says that 15 women potter other women, the tsaras, from yibum. And that, in fact, seems to back Rava's contention that there's no chiddush in saying that they're potter from Yibam. Of course they're potter from Yibam. The only thing that the Mishnah is coming to teach is that they also create a ptur on the tsar, right? So, but we asked on that. We said, well, when Rebbe came to offer us a completely different basis for the idea of the ptur of erva and the ptur of tsara b'mokam Yibam, he brought two separate psukim, ulekacha and v'yibma. That's what he said. So why did he need two separate psukim, one for the tzara and one for the erva, right? So fine, we answered that before, that was talking about tzara, which we'll get back to. But since we mentioned Rebbe's drasha, let's go back and start thinking about Rebbe's drasha. Once again, how did we get to where we are? Because what we thought originally is that the way to understand the fact that an erva is not going to be nofelet b'yibam was based on the pasuk of aleha. And that meant b'mokom aleha, was gzeirah shavah. And then we wondered why we would need the aleha. And we came up with several explanations. We went on a long, futile chase for a shita that would hold that esa is docha losa sashieshbo karet. Okay. We sort of gave up on that. Meanwhile, having examined all of the phases of how do we know that esa is docha losa sa. And then we got to a new idea of hove ishtiri ishtiri. That was some chiddush of ula. Or we actually thought that what we should do is we should take a look at the hekesh of Rav Yonah in the Gemara, and that was the fact that all of the arayas are compared to each other, and therefore maybe there would be a reason to learn out from Eshetach that something should be mutter. And then Rava said, we never needed the pasuk of Aleha. That was your own fantasy, and it led you down all of those blind alleys. In fact, the Aleha was only there to define what the nature of the tzara was. And Rebbe, meanwhile, we brought in sort of Agav, who said, I have a whole different basis for this, and that is ulekacha and v'yibma. So let me just look now at Rebbe, because we've thought about all of these other things at length. We sort of let Rebbe slip by because we only mentioned him in the context of proving to Rava that we do need a pasuk to pater the erva. So let's look again at Rebbe. Gufa. Rebbe Omer, there's two psukim that I'm darshaning. It says, Yevama yavo aleha, ulekacha lalisha ve'yibma. So therefore, I darshan those two words. Both of them have an extra hey. It could have said v'lakach, and it says v'lakacha. It could have said v'yabim, and instead it says v'yibma. That comes to tell me that sarot and arayot are asurot, because each one of them is her and only her, right? Her and only her. So that is to say, her and only her, meaning this particular erva, no other erva, and v'yibma, her and only her, but not her. Cases where she's a tsaras erva. But Rebbe's got a big problem, because since Rebbe's darshaning it from this pasuk and not from the pasuk that appears by Achos Ishto, where it says Litzror, how does it know anything about a Tzora? I don't understand. Will you read that pasuk? Isn't he doing the same thing that we were complaining that Rava was doing? He's making these assumptions based on all the things that we learned when we were kids last week, and thinking about that that's what Yibam is about. So we all know there's an idea of a Tzora. And then he's bringing a raya that from Lekacha v'yibma that the Tzora is, what Tzora? Where Tzora? For God's sake, read the pasuk without your preconceived notions. Where does it say anything about a Tzora in this pasuk? I don't understand what Rebbe is saying. What does it say about Tzorot in this pasuk? Va'od. The Tzorot isn't the whole idea of the Tzorot that they come in the Braita. It says from the pasuk of Litzror. So, I mean, why would Rebbe Bichlal have to darshan it from this pasuk? You got to use that Litzror for something. If he wants to talk about a new Isser of Tzorot, fine, but whatever it is, but he's... There's two separate issues here. First of all, this doesn't talk about Tzora. And second of all, the place that does talk about Tzora tells me the answer of Tzora. So why would I need to learn it from here? Something strange about Rebbe. Answers the Gemara. Let's look at the second issue before we talk about the first issue. You're saying, is not Litzror enough to create the concept of the Tzora being Asura? No. Because, I'll tell you, Litzror is needed, according to Rebbe, for Rebbe Shimon. Now, what is Rebbe Shimon? So let's just pay attention for one moment, because this will expand our minds about some of the issues that are going to be coming up anyway. Here's the issue. Remember that, as we described before answering Ira's question about the idea of the Yibum, remember that there's a concept called Zika. That Zika means that, and it actually creates an Isser. A woman who falls to Yibum is Asura to marry anybody else. Lotia isha tamet achutza. And it means, as the Rambam puts it, the Torah gave you a wife. Now, the level of gave you that wife is not a complete wife, because if it did, then why would it say ulekachalo leisha if she's already an isha, right? So that means that there's two stages over here. There's this first in stage, which we call Zika, which creates enough of a connection to the Yovan that makes her Asura to everybody else. And then there's this further stage of actually taking her as a Yavama. Now, it's because of this, when the Torah says, L'kachalo li'isha, we're going to be examining this, that we have to ask ourselves several questions. One is, when you marry a woman, don't you have to write her a ketubah? Or when you marry a woman, don't you normally have to, like, not jump right into bed with her, but give her, like, a ring or something? I mean, isn't that the main idea of Kiddushin, where we say we don't do Kiddushin bibia? So why over here are we expecting you to be l'kachalo l'isha in a rather dramatic and not very sweet l'kachalo l'isha way? Now, those issues, in fact, lead us to two important discoveries. One is that actually the woman has a ketubah, because as we spoke about in the conversation with Ira, the original marriage's ketubah remains in force for the new marriage to the brother, because we view it as an extension of the commitments to that marriage in both directions. So she has a ketubah. In order to avoid the jumping into bed, and may I point out, this the Malbim points out, which is brilliant, every place where the Torah talks about sleeping with a woman, it always says lavo eleha with an aleph. It's only here that it says lavo aleha, which means jump on her, which is ridiculous. But that's the point that we're going to be medayik later on, that actually you could force yourself on her. So when it says ulekachalo leisha, so then what, it's, isn't that wonderful? What a beautiful deal. Astounding. But anyway, so the idea is that the Rabbanan therefore created a whole process, which is called Ma'amar. Ma'amar is a ersatz kiddushin, which creates an additional level of connectedness to the brother that offered her the ring, gave her Ma'amar. And he treated her the way he would have treated a woman that he's going out with, that he's now taking, right? We're going to see that that creates all kinds of dinim min rabbanan to prevent the other brothers from taking her. If one of the brothers gives her ma'amar, and then what's the halacha if you want to break the engagement? And can you get away with a get? Or do you need a get? Or is chalitza enough? As you can see, this opens up a whole Pandora's box of issues. But now let's get back to Rabbi Yehuda. So we have this idea of litzror. Let me ask you about the following case. There are three brothers. Two of the brothers married two sisters. Both of those brothers die. The remaining brother is faced with a yibum of two sisters. Well, he's not allowed to marry a woman and her sister. What does he do? Does he choose one of them? Says Rabbi Yehuda, no, he chooses neither of them, because they are both married in this case as tsoras, because they are achot zekukato. So each one of them is a tsora to him, because she's the tsora of the other one, and the other one is zekuka to him, you see? So basically they have both become something like an achot isha, because a zekuka is something like an isha. So an achot zekukato will answer both of them. Says Revi, that's why it says litzror, because that's good for the whole point, isn't it? In the event that there is a particular event that creates the relationship of tsora, what's that event? Two of them fall together to the same yavam. Exactly. So two brothers are killed in a car crash. That's an event that creates a tsora. And it's there that the Torah is saying you can't marry them, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Beautiful, right? Beautiful. Do you see how lovely it is? Okay. So you've got to relate to the beauty of these drushes. I mean, it's just amazing how every single letter, forget about the words. So now we're thinking about, look at an ayin instead of an aleph, at a hey, where we don't need a hey, at a mapike, where we could use it. I mean, it's like, whoa. Okay. It's lovely. So back to the poetry of Yibam. So fine. So for the first pasuk, the first question that we asked, why does Rebbe say that this must be talking about tsoras if it doesn't say anything about tsoras? Now, that's a different question. Okay, but the second question is easy to answer. Second question is, he learns it the way Rabbi Shimon learns it, that achot zekukato is considered to be a tsora. Now, let's take the first question. So you ask me, says Rabbi, where does it say a word about a tsora that gives me the right to darshan the lekacha and the yibma as having to do with yivamas and tsoras here? It just says a mitzvah, do yibam, that's all it says. What Rebbe was saying was this. If all it means is to tell me that there's a mitzvah of Yibam, why not just say, v'lakach le'isha? That's all you need to say. U'lekachalo le'isha. Oh, is this beautiful? Oh, it's heart-rending. It's so beautiful. It's just gorgeous. Mamish poetry. Anyway, so why does it say, u'lekacha? It's telling you that there must be a choice of either A or B. Ulekacha, take her. But then there must be a tsora. It's amazing. Because you're faced with a choice of who you're taking. Take her. Ulekacha. That's telling you that we're talking about a tsora. Don't you understand how to read? Oh, gosh. Unbelievable. So therefore, what the pasuk is essentially saying is, if you are faced with a situation where you can make a choice between two women that fall before you. Listen to this, drasha. If you're faced with a situation where you could make a choice between two women, then and only then, that if you want to, the Iboy Nasifai, if you want to, you can choose woman A. And Iboy Nasifai, if you want to, you can choose woman B. Then, Ulekacha, lo, choose one of them as your wife. But if you can't choose between them because one of them is usher, you can't have either of them. It's only if it's vilekacha. Amazing. Totally amazing. So therefore, then and only then is a child. But if you can't choose whichever one you want, then you can't have either. The Darvayu or Assyrian. That's the drasha. Amazing. What a beautiful drasha. And then when it says v'yibma, her, that's coming to tell me. Now, you shouldn't think that that means that this is a gilui, that surah is actually a surah to you under any and all circumstances, even if it wasn't in the context of Yibam, even if it just happens to be that she was married to somebody else. Therefore, it says, "Beyibma." Dafke b'makom yibum is asira tzara, but shelo b'makom yibum sharya tzara. Wow. So 1 minute then. This is an amazing drasha. I mean, how can the Rabbanan walk by this pasuk and ignore this? I mean, it turned out that everything that we've been talking about landed up in a dot in the middle of a hay. I mean, this is like, you know, the ultimate, like we say, the ultimate, where we want to, well, I forgot the word. Richie, come to my aid. How do we talk about where we can concentrate information in as small a space as possible? Come on, you're the guy with all the words. What word am I with?
Information density. Information density.
Density. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Richie. You're in touch over there with Alon. Thank you. So the maximum information density is where you can reduce all the information in the universe to a dot, which of course is the whole idea of the Big Bang, really. It's the whole idea of the Rizal's vision of the Big Bang as being a dot, right? As I've mentioned.
Singularity.
Yeah. A singularity, but there's a way to make it a dot. Okay? We've talked about this, but it's actually amazing. The total information density can be expressed in one dot placed as a speck of dust in the universe. Want to see? It's very simple. Take all of the information in the universe and God will number it. Just make it the Encyclopedia Britannica plus all of Shas. Okay? So give it a godel number. Just give it a code for every number, right? And you've got this gigantic number. Now, that gigantic number, if you turn it into a fraction over one over it, right? So now you've got a fraction, which if you can undo the fraction, you now have the entire information in a Gödel number. Now all you do is you place a dot of a piece of dust in a place in the universe that corresponds to the distance of that fraction between one edge of the known universe and the other edge. Then you have put all of the information in the universe into one speck of dust. So the Ma-Pi-Ke in this case is perfectly useful as the information density of everything we did in the Masechet until now. Perfect. Okay. So therefore, what did the Rabbanan do? How did they just drive right by that speck of dust and not notice that here was all of Shas? What amazing thing. If you're driving by in a spacecraft, you forgot to take along a Shas with you. This is the perfect solution. So how did they just drive by? Oh, so they say that lekachami boile lek Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. The Omer Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, the meaning of the word ulekacha comes to tell me that once you have her as a complete wife that allows you to take her back again. So let's imagine a situation. You were miyabing her. Now you get into a fight. You give her a get. Now you change your mind. You want to remarry her. Is that possible? Or does she automatically going back to being an Eishes Ach and now she's once again Osra on you? So ulekacha means that she is a complete and total likuchin. And you can give her a get, not needing chalitza at this point. And if you want to remarry her, then lekacha again. Fine. So once you took her b'yibam, you've taken her. And even marzira. What is the meaning of the yibma, of that ma'pike? That comes to tell me that you can actually jump on her, so to speak. V'yibma. So that gives a direct relationship between the verb and the object. And therefore, it's the equivalent of Yevamo Yevo Aleha, and that's the Ayin. And according to Rebbe, how does he know Lekacha allows you to give a divorce? He says it says Le'isha. Why do you think it says Le'isha, for heaven's sake? Lekacha lo Le'isha. What do you think, she turned it to something else in between? So obviously, she became your wife. And Al Korcha is just from the word Aleha, because Aleha means jump on her. Honor, Aleha, instead of Aleha. So that means that, obviously, we don't allow you to do that, but if you do that without Mamar, it's a perfectly kosher Yibam, even though she was shouting at you and pushing you away and so on and so forth, the Yibam is done. So what does Rebbe do now with that whole aleha? Because now Rebbe's thrown out everything that we've done until now. And Rebbe says, we don't need the aleha. We're not talking about the aleha, we just darshan yavavam yavav aleha. We're talking about the aleha of the achot isha of litzror. The question over here is, what does Rebbe need the aleha on in the pasuk of isha el achotah lo tikach ligalot ervata aleha? What is that for? Now, gentlemen, this leads us into a complete rabbit hole. Because in order to get into understanding what Rebbe does with aleha, what he does is so totally different than anything that we've done, is that we now enter a completely different world. And that world is the question of chataot. And the reason that we enter it here, of course, is because that's where we're holding. We just read in Vayikra all of the dinim of the chataot, right? So we have the chatat of the Kohen Mashiach, and we have the chatat of the Bezdin as a whole. That's called Par Helam Dovash HaTzibur. And then we have the Nasi, who brings a Sa'ir. And then we have the Yochid, who brings a Kisba. See? There was a good reason for going over the Parsha last week, because it's everything that we need to know here for today's daf. So Rebbe actually uses aleha to tell me those dinim. Okay. So we've got the Gemara directly connecting our Chumash learning with our Yevamos. Kidatanya. Ein chayavin beit din. So now, the din of Par Helam Dover Shal Tzibur in this week's Parsha, the Bezdin is chayav only if they made a mistake on a Dover Shizdono karet v'shigigoto chatat. So if they had made a mistake on something that was an Isser lav, and people did the lav, but there was no Isser karet involved in it. So let's say they made a mistake in defining not a difference in what's considered to be chelev, which is an Isser kares, but a difference in what is considered to be a split hoof and what isn't a split hoof. Okay, so that would be an Isser lav. There is no korban chatas to be brought on that any more than an individual, as we'll see, would bring a korban chatas on that either. So that's number one. The same thing is true about the Kohen Par Kohen Mashiach, where over there he makes a mistake. It has to be a mistake about an Isser Karis. Now, there is also a completely different halacha, which does not appear in Vayikra, but it appears in Parsha Shlach. So in Parsha Shlach, remember, we have this whole different din of Helam Dover, where it says, V'chi tishgu v'lo tasu et kol ha-mitzvot ha'ela. Ashadiber Hashem el Moshe, from where we learn out what mitzvah is, kol ha-mitzvot, avodah zarah. So there's a special din of Helam Dover when it comes to avodah zarah. And that is not the par Helam Dover. Instead, you bring, the Bezdin ends up bringing, a imi einei ha'edah nestalish kaga, v'yasu kol ha'edah, yes, there's a par, but the par is for an oilah. Par ben bakar achad la'ola, and a se'ir izim lechatat. So instead of a normal par helam dover shel tzibor, we have a par and a soyer. Okay. That particular carbon is also only brought in the event that what they said was a mistake about a chi of karas. Now, not everything about avodah zarah is a chi of karas. So we have the four avodas, or to do the avodah bederech that is normally done. That's a chi of karas. That's a chi of skila, right? But that's a chi of karas. And things like kissing the avodah zarah, worshiping it in a way that is not the normal way to worship an avodah zarah, making love to the avodah zarah. You know, people make love to their cars nowadays. So all of that is considered to be a not chi of a par v'soyer, because it wasn't a chi of karas, it was a chi of lav. So over there, you're only going to be chayav for avodas kerchovim in the tzibur. It's referring to the Bezdin, who made a mistake in hora. Ela al dover shechayavina zedano karet v'shigigigoto chatat. Now, there is also the Mishnah in Horios that says this about other things. Kol mitzvah shebat Torah, that the din is that chayavin azedano karet v'shigigigoto chatat. It has to be a mitzvah that is both chayav karas and is chayav chatas. Well, obviously, isn't every mitzvah that's chayav karas chayav chatas? No. 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 How about bris mila? How about korban pesach? Those are chayav karas, but there's no chayav chatas in not doing it, right? Because the Torah never talked about a mitzvah asay. It only said a mitzvah asher lo teyasena. Okay. So therefore, the rule has to include both elements. If this is something that you chayev chatas on, you chayev koras on, and chayev chatas on, then and only then is there a chiyev of bringing a korban b'shogeg. What does the yachid bring? The yachid brings either a kisbar si'ira, which we just learned in Parshas Vayikra. A nasi brings a sa'ir, which we just learned in Parshas Vayikra. A mashiach, Kohen Mashiach, that was the first korban in Vayikra, in the Chataot, and the Bezdin, the second korban in Vayikra, in the list of Chataot, they are maybe in a par. But if it comes to Avodas Kochavim, what's the din? Oh, so then, since it says over there, the Inshlach, it says that im nefesh achat techate bishkaga, in the same issue of Avodas Zarah, so then a nefesh achat, what's a nefesh achat? A nefesh achat could be a yochid, it could be a nasi, it could be a kohen mashiach. They're all a nefesh achat. So when it comes to avodah zara, there is no distinction between what kind of nefesh achat. You are reduced to just being a nefesh. You're all the same. And therefore, if you're an individual kohen gadol, who's Mashuach B'Shem and Amishcha, or you're the Nasi, or you're just a plain Joe, the din is, remember, Harbe Yosi, Ike B'Shuka, even in the Gemara, plain people are plain Joes, and therefore, they all have the same din. And what does it say there? It says to bring on Avodah Zarah a Si'ira. Don't have a choice of a Kitzpah, it has to be a Si'ira. So over there, the Tzibur is maybe a par and a sayer, as we just read in the Pasuk in Shlach. Par la'ola, sayer la'chatat. Now, that you know the din, how do we know this din? That's where we're going to get to Aleha. Because believe it or not, we know all of those dinim from Aleha. Oh gosh, that's crazy. Yep. So take a look how this happened. Minani mili, the Tana Rabbanan, v'noda ha'chatat asher chatu Aleha. So, it says that pasuk in Vayikra that we just had over Shabbos, and it says that if the Bezdin makes a mistake in a Horah, and then they know, they find out what it is that they did wrong. Says Rebbe, it says Asher Chatu Aleha. So therefore, Nemar Kan Aleha, and it says Lahalan Aleha. What's the Lahalan? Well, we know where the Lahalan is. Isha el achota lo titzror legalot ervata aleha. Oh my gosh, this achot isha turns out to be everywhere. So therefore, in the same way that achot isha is in Isser Koret, as it says beferesh, so too, malahalan davashechayavin al zidono karet, v'yashigigato chatat. Therefore, afkan davashechayavin al zidono karet. The point over here is where you chayav the karet, where it's similar to the din of achot isha, and that's where your chayav asher yigato chatat. That's what Rebbe does for aleha. Now we know what he uses aleha, but that's all very nice. In the case of the tzibur, that's the par of the tzibur, which is called the par helim dover shel tzibur. But how do we know that that's true about the kohen mashiach? Mashiach minolan. Oh, that's simple. In Mashiach, it says, remember, all this is from over Shabbos, so it's fresh in our memories. What does it say? Im ha-kohen ha-mashiach yecheta le'ashmat ha'am. What does it have to do with l'ashmat ha'am? It's telling you that it's the same ashma that the tzibur, on the same type of chet, that the tzibur is chayev, that's what we're talking about. Hare Mashiach tzibur, that's given. Okay, how do we know now that the others, the yachid and the nasi, how do we know that they're also only going to be chayev their korban on that case? That we learn out from a gezeirah shava. Because by the chatas of a yachid and the chatas of a nasi, it mentions alachat mi mitzvot Hashem ha-shalot ha-asena. So we learn out mitzvot, mitzvot. And when it comes to the din of par helam davar shel tzibur, it uses exactly the same word, alachot mi mitzvot. So it's coming to tell me it's the same mitzvah. So just like the par helam davar shel tzibur is only brought for a mitzvah, which we've learned from aleha is only a chiyuv karet. The same thing is true for a yachid and for a nasi. Okay, but you also talked about avodas kochavim. How do you know that? V'lo ba'avodat kochavim. Now that's in Parsha Shlach, not in Parsha Vayikra. V'lo ba'avodat kochavim ela al davar shezidono chayvin hazidono karet v'al shigigato chatat. How do we know that? Well, by the tzibor avodas kochavim in Shlach, it uses the word me'enei ha'eda. And in Vayikra, it also says, Benela me'enei ha'eda. So just like we proved that enei ha'eda, when Vayikra is referring to Aleha, which is Achot Isha, something similar to Achiev of Karet, and that has to be true, therefore, about the idea of the Korban on Avodah Zarah. Okay, but you still haven't told me how Im Nefesh Echad, which includes the Yochid and the Nasi and the Mashiach, that we learned from Im Nefesh Echad, that comes to tell me that a Yochid, a Nasi, Kohen Mashiach are all included, and it says Ve Im Nefesh Echad. So Ve Im Nefesh Echad means that just like the upper Pasuk, which was talking about the Tzibor, bring only for Avodah Zarah, that's a Korban, Chiev on a Chiev Kares, so to Ve, and the same thing is true about the Yochid and the Nasi and the Par. The beautiful vav mosif al inyan rishon. Therefore, you can learn out the latter case, which is the nefesh achat, from the previous case, from the upper case, which is the case of the bezdin who made a mistake. Now, what about according to Rabbana? Now we've got big problems because all of these dinim were based on that little aleha of achot isha. Now the Rabbana have messed us up because they said we need aleha to tell me the din of an erva that falls to Yibam. Uh-oh. So how do they know all of these dinim that these karbonos are only brought on a chiev of kares? So high swarming only. Way do they know that? Oh, they've got to figure it out from a completely different source. So they learn it actually in the opposite direction. They learn it starting at the other end. You'll notice, but if anybody tuned into the podcast of Rabbi Yoshua, where he used to read over the psukim to his son. So when he was makrile Rabbi Yeshua Libre, when he would read over the pasuk, Torah achat yelachem lo'oseh bishkaga, that's in Shlach. So then it's saying, anything that was done, bishkaga, all is included, meaning that it's comparing the din of the Avodah Zarah to all of the mitzvahs that we're referring to, which means that that becomes, im nefesh, as it's presented over here, is a reference to all of the different korbanos that are brought are being compared over here to Avodah Zarah. Because it says over there that v'nisnach lahem kishkagai lahem, and that is b'chol adat b'nei Yisrael ki l'chol ha'am b'shkaga. And then it goes on to say, Vim nefesh achat techet bishkaga. And there it says, Hezrach b'vnei Yisrael, lager agar, Torah achat yelachem lo se bishkaga, and compares them all to Avodah Zarah. Because it says, V'nefesh asher taseh biyad rama, v'nichreta ha'nefesh ahi, ki devar Hashem baza, and so on and so forth. Now, therefore, what that does is it brings us right back to the opposite direction, to first having established that the din of the yachid, which includes this, the nasi, and which includes the par, the kohen mashiach, all of them are only chayev in a case where the iser was specifically about this avodah zarah that was a chayev of kares. So therefore, it's coming to tell me, just like Avodas Kochavim is a Dover Shechayov and Azdono Koret Val Shigoto Chatat. Okay, but that's only a Yochid and a Nasi and a Mashiach. It's true that you've compared Avodas Kochavim of those three states to any mitzvah that is Chayav Achatas, Chayav Bishar mitzvahs. But you haven't explained to me how you know the Bezdin. How do you know that it's Sibor by Avodas Kochavim? Oh, because since it says Ve'im Nefesh, let's go the other direction. The way that Rebbe used the Vav was to derive the latter case from the upper case. the way the Rabbanan use the Vav is to derive the uppercase from the latter case, because the first information given was about the Nefesh Achat. But since the Vav connects the Nefesh Achat to Ime Einei Ha'edah, so now we can go backwards and say that a Tzibor, a Bezdin, who made a mistake about Avodah Zarah, is only where it's a mistake that has to do with the Issacharis. So now we know Nilmod Elyon Mitachton. And how do we know the Tzibor in a normal mitzvah, which is in Vayikra, the Par Helam Davar B'Tzibor? Oh, they also learn Me'enei, Me'enei. Perfect. Which leaves us only with one question. How does Rebbe use Torah Achat, Yeh, which compared all of the mitzvahs to Avodah Zarah, since he learned that out from his own limudim, starting with Aleha? Miboy Leli Tekirit Tanya. An amazing halacha. Lefisha Matzinu Shechalaka Katuv Ben Yechidim LeMerubim. Yechidim B'Skila, Lefichach Momonam Palat. Merubim B'Sayif, Lefichach Momonam Avad. Yochol Nachalok B'Korbenotehem. Now listen to this brilliant idea. There is only one place in the Torah where someone who is Chayev Misa in Bezdin loses his money, and his money is put in a pile with other people and burned. Weird. Where is that? Well, you know, that is an Ir HaNidachat. But that is coupled to another weird halacha about an Ir HaNidachat, which is that if most of the city ended up being Nidach to Avodah Zarah, then instead of the individuals who worshipped Avodah Zarah being Chayev Skila, they're Chayev much lesser Chayev Misa, they're only Chayev Sayev. Now, the Gemara says, okay, let's link those two ideas. The lesser Misa comes with an anomaly, that the person loses his ability to give over a Yerusha to his children. And instead of his heirs inheriting, it's all burned. Now, that seems to imply that the structure of Kapara and Havenais for a Ir HaNidachat, the Yechidim in an Ir HaNidachat, is different fundamentally because of the psychology and the interrelationship of mob psychology to doing Yisurim is fundamentally different than normal cases. Now, if that is the case, then obviously psychology serves as an even greater element in determining what to bring as a Korban Chatas than it does to determine what Misa to be Mechayev, because the whole point of a Chatas is the lack of awareness of what you're being doing, right? What you're meant to do. So now, when you're in a city where everybody believes that it's a mitzvah to do this Avodah Zarah, right? So they're all been told that by the people who persuaded them, by the Medichim, they're all told, look, it's a mitzvah to go up and kiss the Kotel and bow down to it, and this has the kayach of the Kotel to be made to you, or to be made, and they all go do this thinking it's a mitzvah. Not such bad people. They're just screwed up. So now, since that's a question of doing something bit shogeg with one's mass psychology, because everybody else is doing it, so it must be, it's a mitzvah. So now, would they bring the same korban that everybody else brings? I mean, shouldn't there be a difference in the carbon if there's this very unusual difference in the money, the dispensation of the money, and in the type of misa der chayev? Yes, there should be a difference. So you might think, in fact, that there would be a difference. Therefore, says Rebbe, I need to know Torah achati elachem lo sebishkaga, that when it comes to asiyas b'shoigeg, there's no difference in the carbon. Maskifla Reb Chilkia Mihagrunia. Now, this is Dafka Reb Chilkia, because he is the one who knows how to make differences, right? So that's why he's called Chilkia. So because of that, he's got an amazing question. His question is, what exactly would you have them do? Because you have to make a chilek in the carbon. It can't be the same carbon that's been used for anything else. It's something that's an anomaly, in the same way that the money is an anomaly. Which korban is an anomaly, huh? I challenge you. You're telling me, Rebbe, if it wouldn't be for the fact that it says Torah Achat, that then we would have to bring another korban. Okay. Hai lav hachi, Hava mina nichalek, says Rabbi Chilkia. I would have said we have to create a new carbon. Tell me what that new carbon would be, okay? What should he bring? My lysay. Should he bring a par? No. A par is set aside for tzibur, a normal mitzvah. Hudamaisa. Should he bring a kispa? No. Because that's what a yochid brings on any avera, right? So that's bishar mitzvah, hudamaisa. Should he bring a sawyer? No. Because that's the carbon. Bishar mitzvah for a nasi. Should he bring a par la'ola and a sawyer lachatas? No. Because that's what a tzibur brings bavidus kechavim. So what should he bring? A seira? A yochid brings a seira for anything if he wants. So therefore, you're not giving me any good reason for needing a pasuk because I would not have had any option. You're telling me I should create an anomaly. Well, what the heck is the anomaly, please? Give me the anomaly. Therefore, I'd say I don't need that. No, you still. It's true, because salka daitach amina, maybe I would have said like this. Since a tzibur bohora'a brings a par la'ola, and a se'ir l'chatat in avodar zara, so they should bring the opposite. Inunimu nami naizu ipcha. Let them bring a se'ir la'ola and a par l'chatat. Or maybe when it says that they'd have to bring a different carbon, it means sarich ve'en lo takana. We don't have another carbon for them to bring, which would bring mean that they'en lo kapara. They would not have a kapara b'shogeg. Maybe. So tzarech ve'en lo takana. That's what the pasuk is coming to tell me. Kamash malan, that, no, actually, it's all the same. Omar le Levi le Rebbe. This is a wonderful question that Levi asks Rebbe, and it opens up our eyes to some of the greater complexities of the Mishnah, and this is why the Gemara presents it in this fashion. So, what Levi wants to know is, why does it only say 15 Nashim in the Mishnah, when actually there are 16. Now, we know, we already discussed this in the Mishnah, that actually there are 16 because one's own mother could fall to one in Yibum. How would that happen? I mean, after all, once it's your mother, then any of your brothers from the same father would be asur to marry her. So where would it possibly be that your mother would be able to fall to you from another brother? Doesn't make sense. There's only one possibility, and that is that your father never married your mother. He actually raped your mother. So we always use the word rape, even though obviously that's it, because that's the Gemara's word, anusata. We have to make it easy to recognize that we're talking about a case where there's no marriage. Obviously, we don't mean necessarily forcibly raped, but the point is they're not married. So now we have a machlokas about what the din is in the event of a child born out of wedlock, which is what we're talking about over here. And that's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanim. So basically, Rabbi Yehuda holds that even if your father had raped a woman, she is asura on all of his sons. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this case could not happen. Because if it's your mother, then your brothers from that father, and those are the only brothers that we're interested in when it comes to Yibum, your brothers from that father could not have legally married her. And if they're not legally married to her, she's not going to fall to you for Yibum. Because the dinim of Yibum are only in a case where a man has an isha, nashim. So, if that's the case, the Mishnah could have certainly had this case, aliba de Rabbanan. That would be a normative halacha, where we go according to the Rabbin. The Rabbanan who argue on Rabbi Yehuda, they are matir b'anusat aviv. So therefore, Levi seems to be asking a very reasonable question. Why not list 16 women and have it open to the Rabbanan as well? Okay, Rebbe's response to this is biting. Omar le Levi le Rebbe, my ayre detani chamesh esrei nashim, lishnei shesh esrei nashim. So Rebbe's response to this is, Omar le, so first he mutters as if to himself, but clearly meant for Levi to overhear. Good God, this guy hasn't got a brain in his head. The heck? Kimeduma li she'en lo moach bekatkado. Where's your brains, you idiot? My daicha. Now, when Rebbe says something like that to a Talmud, it's meant to be a real stinging barb, because what it means is any idiot would know the answer to that. And if you don't know the answer to that, then you simply are too lazy to use your brains, and you're coming around to ask questions that you should have worked on properly yourself. You don't come and ask questions where you've already learned the sugya 40 times, supposedly, before you came in to see me, and now you ask me a dumb question. I mean, unless you're some kind of retard. So that's basically what he's saying to Levi. And then he gives the answer. And he says, what are you thinking? Ma da'atcha? Because you want to have a case where a mother falls to a son from another brother. But that's only possible if she is the rape victim of your father. Or it's out of wedlock in any event, right? So imo anusat aviv. The problem is that imo anusat aviv is actually only possible according to the Rabbana. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not possible, because even an anusat aviv is asura, and therefore the brother could never have married her with a real marriage, because the marriage would never have happened. We'll see about that later on, whether actually anusat aviv, the marriage can't happen, because the truth is that it may be possible to have imo afilo aliva the Rebbe Shimba, but we're going to talk about that later. So let's pretend right now the marriage couldn't have happened. And that is a plukta de rebuta v'rabbanan, and beplukta lo kamari. We're not talking about cases which are arguments. We want to keep things clean and clear. And because of that, we only talk about cases that we don't have to start getting into all kinds of hassles about whether this is true or that is true. Okay. So therefore, you're an idiot. Now, the question is it really so obvious that we don't talk about plukta? Isn't there a plukta, plukta lo kamari, velo? Hare iser mitzvah, the iser kedusha, which is a machlokas Rabbi Akiva v'rabbana, v'katani. In the next parak, we're going to have a Mishnah that talks about women that fall to Yibum that can only get chalitza and can't get Yibum. Now, one of these cases is the set of what's called isere kedusha. Isere kedusha or isere lavin. So, for instance, a mamzeret, right? So now, if a mamzeret falls to a brother, so is he supposed to do yibam? Well, theoretically, yes, because eses docha lo ta'aseh, and therefore he really could do yibam under these circumstances. However, we asked him to do yibam, and we said that he should only do chalitza in order not to marry this mamzeret. Now, the question is, that's only true if you hold that marriage to a mamzeret is a binding marriage. But the problem is that according to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says that any iser lav, the outcome of such a union is mamzerus. So the child will be a mamzer or mamzeret, as the case may be. In which case, Rabbi Akiva clearly holds that there is no kiddushin that would take place, that could be chal, because only a non-possible kiddushin creates mamzeres. So Rabbi Akiva would never agree that you should do chalitza, because she couldn't possibly fall to you as a real wife of your brother. And nonetheless, the Mishnah says that case, despite the fact that we know it doesn't work, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva. So you see that our Masechet does list cases that are pluktas. Well, says Rebbe, I'm only talking about in our perek, the Pirkan Kamrina. That's why you're an idiot. Okay. So in our perek, there's no machlokas, because after all, this is the perek that introduces the fundamental concepts. We're not going to start getting involved in the details of machlokasin. And that itself, by the way, is a very valid thing to understand from Rebbe, who was the Masader of the Mishnah. So it means that Rebbe is saying that an opening perek is meant to be a stripped-down, easy introduction to the main ideas of the Masechet. And because of that, I would not have listed a plukta over here, right? But is that true? Well, I mean, we learned ourselves when we went ahead and we peeked at Daf Yud Gimel, when we went through the Mishnah over there, And over there, the end of that Mishnah was that Beit Shammai or Matirin et Atzerot Lachin and Beit Hillel or Osrin. So there is a machlokas in the first parak. That's not called a machlokas. Beit Shammai, B'mokum, Beit Hillel, that's not something that's confusing, because any reader knows to dismiss the opinions of Beit Shammai if there's a Mishnah that's going on Liba the Beit Hillel, and we still keep it simple. Well, now, wait a minute. It's still not simple. Because doesn't our Mishnah list the case of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo as one of the 15 women? And that is a big machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbana. Now, what is that machlokas? Let's remember what the case of the Eshet Ach Shelo Haya Ba'olamo is. It's really quite straightforward. So a brother is born after the death of his brother that left a wife to Yibam. And now another brother, let's give them names. There's big brother Reuven, younger brother Shimon, and then baby brother Levi, who is born only 20 years after Reuven. And meanwhile, Reuven has died, leaving a childless wife, right? So now this brother Levi, baby Levi, he is being called upon 20 years later. He is being called upon to now marry the wife of his deceased 40-year-old brother, Reuven. He's not allowed to. She's Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, and there's no din of Yibam. Fine. But brother Shimon, who was only a year younger than Reuven, he goes ahead and he does the mitzvah of Yibam, standard mitzvah of Yibam. Then 10 years later, Shimon dies. Levi is now 30 years old, whatever, and he's being called upon to now do the Yibam on Shimon's wife. Problem is that Shimon's wife was once Reuven's wife. And as Reuven's wife, she could not fault him for Yibam, and therefore the Iser Eshet Ach was still on her from the first marriage. So therefore, there is no way that little baby Levi, who's now quite old, can possibly be Mekayim this mitzvah, because this woman is an erva to him from his first brother who had died before he was born. That's the case of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. Rabbi Shimon says, look, once Shimon, the second brother, did the Yibam on Reuven's wife is no longer a Yevama to baby Levi. Because the new marriage, and this relates to the discussion with Ira 2 days ago, the new marriage subsumes the original marriage. And she who was once a Yevama Shalobabaka mitzvah, the moment that she married Shimon, which was after the birth of Levi, so at that point, she is now the wife of, we'll talk about it in a minute whether it's after or before, but she is now the wife of Shimon. And Shimon is not somebody that was lo haya ba'olamo. And therefore, when Shimon dies, it's a brand new story. We no longer look at the fact that she was once married to Reuven, because she is now, that marriage has become the marriage to Shimon. And Shimon has lived with him in the same world. That means that according to Rabbi Shimon, we should not have the case in the Mishnah of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, right? Wrong, says the Gemara. Because even Rabbi Shimon is only talking about a case where, when Levi, baby brother Levi, was born, he entered into a universe in which there was a woman married to Shimon. And as far as he's concerned, the history of this woman, that she was once married to a brother that he never met and never coexisted with in the universe, is irrelevant, because this woman to him was introduced to him, welcome to the universe, Levi, was introduced to him as the wife of Shimon. I'm your brother Shimon's wife. How are you? So then when 20 years later Shimon dies, so then at that case, that moment, Levi will be Mekayim the mitzvah of Yibam. But suppose the exact same case happens, but Levi, baby brother, is born after Reuven's death, but before Reuven's wife was mityabemet to Shimon. Now, when he's introduced to the world, the Yavama says to him, "Welcome, baby Levi, to the universe. I am your deceased brother's wife." Oh my gosh. So then that means he met her when he first entered the world as an Isser, because he wasn't allowed to be Miyabim her. There, Rabbi Shimon agrees, well, if that's the case, it remains Usser. I only said that there's no din of Eshes Achshu Yabo Lamo when at the moment that Levi enters the universe, she's all married to Shimon anyway. That's the point. Therefore, that case could exist even according to Rabbi Shimon. Because the only time the Pligi Rabbi Shimon, we said over there that nonetheless it says it, we could say we're talking about over here a case of Benolad, Ula Besofibim. First, Levi was born, and then Shimon did the Yibum. And over there, Rabbi Shimon doesn't argue. Rabbi Shimon says, no. So then they were introduced by Isser, that Isser remains. Hold on a sec. Didn't Rabbi Oshaya say later on that Rabbi Shimon also argues about that case? And Rabbi Shimon says that as long as currently the situation of this woman is defined by her marriage to Shimon, that she falls to Levi from Shimon? And I don't care when Levi was born, before the Yibum or after. Though didn't Rabbi Oshaya v'amar Rabbi Oshaya chaluka ya Rabbi Shimon even in the first case? Yes. Yes, Rav Oshaya says that, but if you remember, which we don't remember because we didn't learn it yet, unless you remember it from the last time we learned it, or from 2 times ago that we learned it, or from 3 times ago that we learned it, or from 4 times ago that we learned it, it depends how old you are, or from 5 times ago that we learned it, maybe by now you do remember it, but anyway, the point is that the idea over here is that we showed and proved that Rabbi Oshaya was wrong and it was tiyufta. Bye-bye, Rabbi Oshaya. So therefore, that doesn't bother me. So now, Rabbi is still correct in asserting that our parak does not have machlokasin. And that the case, you're right, we'll have to limit the case of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, according to Rabbi Shimon. What's wrong with that? I only need to bring an example of a case which gives us 15 cases. But the only way I can get to 16 cases is if I decisively void the approach of Rabbi Yehuda. And I only go according to Rabbanan, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no way that your mother could be married to your brother. At least that's what we think now. She might be able to be married illegally, but we'll talk about that, as I said before. So therefore, there's no machlokas. But wait, there is a machlokas. Because, via Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, v'chein tani Rabbi Chiya. You need to know that in all cases of our Mishnah, the Mishnah that is in the Perek that begins with the idea of, and this is an important yesod, because we'll keep coming back to this Mishnah. And that is four brothers. The Perek that is actually called four brothers, Arba Achim. So now, in that Mishnah, we have a case of two brothers who were married to two sisters. Fine, not a very unusual case. They had another two brothers. The two brothers married to the two sisters died. And that leaves, this was the idea that we discussed yesterday. Achot zekukato. So the zika of Yibam then creates a situation in which these two sisters become zekukot, they become tsorot, therefore, in the context of the zika. And because of that, neither of them can get Yibam. Because if one brother will take one of them, he's marrying the sister of his zekuka. And if the other one says, well, it's okay, you take that one and I'll take this one. It doesn't matter, because each one of those women is going to be the sister of the woman who was zekuka to you. And we treat a zika as if it's a marriage, and therefore you're not allowed to marry them. Now, that's called a chot zekukato. Now, that's very sweet and very easy to understand. What happens if one of those women is an erva to brother A, and the other one of them is an erva to brother B, and they're both sisters? Very simple situation. What happened was, is that the two sisters ended up each having a daughter from the man that they married, and then the uncle married the daughter, right? So what's the big deal? So now when the two sisters fall to the two brothers, what's going to happen is that the mother-in-law is going to fall to him for Yibum, because the first two brothers were married to the mother, each one to one of the mothers. But then the one that falls to the other brother is a mother-in-law to the first brother. And the other wife of the second brother, of the first brother, was the mother-in-law of the second brother, and the second brother had a mother-in-law from the first brother, right? So then what happens is there's no longer a problem of achot zkukato. Why? Because the one who is a brother-in-law to Reuven, let's call him, well, let's use the standard Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. That way it'll be easier all through these cases. So Reuven's now Yavama that has fallen let's take Reuven and Shimon always as the first two brothers. So they're the oldest ones. They were the ones who died. They left their wives to Levi and Yehuda. Okay. So that way we'll have like a sort of a standard. Okay. So now Reuven and Shimon, the two sisters, since it was the daughter of the different sisters that married the other brothers, Levi and Yehuda. So now when Reuven and Shimon die, the women that fall to them are indeed two sisters, but one of them is the mother-in-law of Levi, and one of them is the mother-in-law of Yehuda. Then they're not achot zkukato anymore. And then comes the important idea in the Mishnah, ha'asura lezeh muteret lezeh, va'asura lezeh muteret lezeh. So then since they actually have crossed out the ability of Yibum on each one of them to one brother, then they are no longer nachot zgukato to the other brother, and therefore there's no problem. He can go ahead and do Yibum because there are not two sisters that are zekukos anymore. Clear? It's absolutely essential to get this first idea clear. If it is not clear to anyone, please indicate that it's not clear, because this is the fundamental case. Okay, it's not clear to you. All right, so let's go over the case again. Two sisters. We're always talking about two sisters married to two brothers. The two brothers' name are Reuven and Shimon. And these two sisters each has a daughter, one from Reuven, her husband, and the other one from Shimon, her husband. Now, there are two other brothers we haven't mentioned before, Reuven and Shimon's brother. One is called Levi and one is called Yehuda, just like in real life. And Levi and Yehuda go and marry their nieces, which is a lovely thing to do. It's a big mitzvah to marry your niece. Okay, fine. So they go ahead and they marry their nieces. Now, each one of those nieces, if their husbands die, if their husbands, Reuven and Shimon, die, will fall to the remaining brothers, the surviving brothers, right? Levi and Yehuda. So far, so good. One of those wives of Reuven, one wife of Reuven, was the mother-in-law of Levi, right? Because he married the daughter of his brother, who is now deceased. And the other one was the mother-in-law of Yehuda, because he married the daughter of the other sister, whose husband is now deceased. So then that means that these two sisters fall to Yibum to two brothers. But one of them doesn't really fall to Yibum to one of the brothers, because she's one of the Arias. She's his mother-in-law, and Chamoto does not fall to Yibum. She only falls to one of the brothers, to whom she is not a mother-in-law. And the other one is a mother-in-law to the other brother. Therefore, neither of these women are locked through a Zika into being related to their own sister in the Yibum, because the Yibum doesn't include both sisters. It includes each sister separately, one to one brother and one to the other brother. Now, is that clear?
Why are the mothers falling to Yibum if they have two daughters?
What's that?
Why are the mothers falling to Yibum?
This is from another husband. Sorry.
Okay.
Right. Obviously misrepresented here. So, I mean, what's important in this case is just to remember the yesod that women can have daughters that are not from the same husband that we're talking about now, as Ira just pointed out, which I didn't bother pointing out, that of course that would have to be the case. And that's important to take into consideration, as we'll see in a moment. Because remember when I spoke about iconizing these cases, the iconization makes it easy to understand the case. And then when you explain the case, it takes some time to get it straight in your mind. Just like you're trying to explain what a first cousin once removed is and so on. But the icon is clear in your mind. This is a case that can easily happen. A mother-in-law that falls to Yibam from a brother, from a same father, in which the two women that fell from the two brothers were sisters. And we have to work it out. So here was a great example. I said over the case, and I didn't say over the details because it was an icon. So the icon needs to include the fact that women can have children from another person who will make them sisters, but it will not affect the case that we're talking about now because this is a different family, right? So even though they're sisters from the same common father, but they can have children from a brother of yours, and those can still be married by you in the context of Yibam, because this father, who's your brother, died without children. So that's an important point to remember as well. Now, the point is that there were two stages to this statement. You can have two sisters, that was the case, arba achim, shenatsu shtei achayot, umeitu anesuim et haachayot. So two sisters fall to two brothers in Yibam. That's the fundamental underlying case. Then the additional issue is, and you'll see why I'm phrasing it this way as we go along, the additional issue is that there's also a rule that asurim lezeh, muteret lezeh, asur lezeh, muteret lezeh, then it's okay for them to go ahead and to get Yibam because they're not zekukos one to another in the state of this Yibam. Now, the reason that we say this is a machlokas is because since Rav Yehuda quoted Rav, and Rav Chiya has a brisa that says, all of the cases, we're assuming that that means, all of the cases in our Mishnah, 15 cases, any one of those cases can be the erva that is asur lezeh and muteret lezeh. Now that is a tremendous chiddush. There's not a single one of the 15 cases listed in the Mishnah that cannot end up being a sister who falls to Yibam to two brothers who are married to two sisters. And one will be an erva on one brother and one will be an erva on the other brother. Now this strikes you as, what? I mean, is that really true? I mean, let's take even the first case. I mean, what about your daughter? Right? We're talking about the daughter of Reuven and the daughter of Shimon are going to be sisters and they're going to fall to you for Yibam. How is that possible? Let's imagine a case. Let's try to take a case. Reuven marries a woman and she has a daughter. Okay? So he divorces his wife and now the brother marries her. It can't happen. You're not allowed to marry your brother's wife that was divorced. So how can one of your brothers possibly be married to a woman who is going to fall to you and who's going to be your daughter? It's impossible because she couldn't have married another brother because she is the grusha of your brother. And a grusha, any of the brothers from any grusha of any of the other brothers cannot get married. So what do you mean they're all, they can't possibly be sisters falling to you in Yibam? That's insane. But it isn't insane. It only seems insane. And there's a very simple case. The reason that it isn't insane is because if this woman was raped and becomes pregnant now from Reuven out of wedlock, and he never married her, then his brother Shimon could have married her, according to Rabbi Shimon. Now, in other words, this is a machlokas, right? Are you allowed to marry a woman that was raped by your brother? Okay, so that's exactly where the question comes up. Is it possible for you to marry a woman that was a rape victim? And this is going to be very impossible according to the Rabbanan, but very possible according to Rabbi Shimon. That means, do you understand the case? Again, try to just take the icon of the case. The icon of the case is there's nothing to prevent your brothers from being married to your daughter, even though it's all the two daughters that they're going to be marrying are going to be from the they're all your daughters, and nonetheless, they're going to be mutar to your brothers because you never married the woman that you impregnated with this daughter and with the other daughter. So one of them marries one of the daughters, one of them marries the other daughter, the two daughters are sisters, the two brothers die, leaving you, in this case, with your two daughters, or in the better case, where there's two men who were brothers, each of them had a daughter, then one of those daughters will be his daughter, the other daughter will be the other brother who raped his daughter, right? So this woman was a rape victim of these multiple brothers. And then they went ahead and these daughters went and married the brothers. Everything else was legal. Brothers from the same father. Regular marriages. Right? So, okay, you get the picture. That's the important thing, is to get the picture. Now, in order to be able to get the picture of every one of these cases, you need to learn to picture. Because otherwise, we are going to go through this Rashi with endless complexity and draw these insane charts in order to be able to get it clear. Now, you think that that's my personal opinion, and I would like to read to you the words of the Ritva, okay? And here's what the Ritva says. Mefurash yafe bepirish Rashi zal. Rashi has taken a lot of trouble. How it's possible. Heichadi kore behem. Hasur lezeh mutaret lezeh, right? And he says, but keep in mind that barur hu b'tziur haseichel l'mi sheyesh lo moach b'katkado. A conscious vision of a picture, if you do have a brain in your head, he's obviously paraphrasing the Gemara here with Levi, so if you do have a brain in your head, don't draw these pictures. Use a tziur of the seichel, which is what the word that we use for icon. Your brain has a neuron, so to speak, that is sensitive to the idea called cousin. And that means that we have to get a few basic concepts clear in order for our minds to be able to not analyze the case, but see the case. So we already understood some of these icons. One of them is to stop worrying about whether a marriage is legal and start only thinking about how it is that the woman got pregnant. We couldn't care less whether she was married or not. That's not the point. We're talking about the relationships between the offspring, right? So that's number one. We also have an icon now for the discussion we just had with Ira, which is that these women can have daughters from a previous marriage that has nothing to do with the current relationship in which they're in and will not change the dispensation of these women vis-a-vis the yibum of the husband that they're currently married to. The women could have multiple daughters and still fall to yibum because they're falling to yibum from a guy that marries them after their previous marriage in which they had the daughters. That's also an icon. So we can take out that prejudice from the picture as well. Now, let's expand by taking one case and looking at all of the various things that we need to take into consideration in order for us to learn which things we are able to iconize and which things we would have to go ahead and say, this doesn't make any sense. So I want to take the case that Rashi brings of Achot Imo. Let's take that case of Achot Imo and look into it, so that then we can understand what are some of these sodas that we need to remember in order to just have a picture, as the Ritva says, a tziur asecha, a picture in your brain of what this looks at, which if you're asked to explain, may take you 10 minutes to figure out and explain. But that doesn't mean that you don't know what the case is. That's what the Ritva is coming to say. The fact that you have to talk it out and you'll have to correct yourself 15 times. Oh, wait, but I forgot to mention that, as you just saw in my conversation with Ira. I forgot to mention that, yes, of course, they would have to have been from another father, but that's obvious because it could always be from another father. That's always a fallback position, right? So let's take, therefore, this complex case. Now, this is smack bang in the middle of the big Rashi on the page. V'chein achot imo shel Reuven, v'achot imo shel Shimon. Now, this is a much more complex case, and it will clarify to us what we should not get hung up on. Okay? So here's what we have to take into consideration. How could your mother's sister possibly be a sister to another woman, one of whom is married, is falling to you from Yibam, from a brother of yours, and the other one is falling to you from a brother of yours? What would be the case? So now what Rashi goes through to explain is that we could have multiple marriages of the same woman who has children from different husbands, and it's even possible, here's another break in our prejudices, it is even possible for the same father to have fathered children from the two sisters. Of course that's possible. He doesn't have to be married to them at the same time. He marries sister one, has a daughter. Sister one dies. He marries sister two, has a daughter. Fine. Now we have two daughters who are related to the same father, correct? And there was no problem, despite the fact that they had to come from the same father, and there were two sisters that that father had married. Yeah, what, Gershi?
But how does the second sister ever fall to the...
We'll talk about that. I'm taking each piece that we need to let go of the prejudice separately, because that's why I'm choosing this example, so that we can figure out what it is that makes these cases hard to understand, is that we're not used to certain relationships. So if I tell you a guy had two daughters, one from each sister, you'll say, what? How could a guy have two daughters and two sisters if you're not allowed to marry a woman and her sister? Why not? You're only not allowed to marry one and a sister simultaneously. What gave you the idea that we're talking about simultaneously? So any case that has a man having multiple children from two sisters who now, and once we understand that that's an easy thing, so now we've got mother, who are two sisters, and daughter, who are two sisters. Oh, we already have the case. Because we have mother, who are two sisters, and daughter, are two sisters, and four sons, which was always the Arba Achim, and two of those sons marrying the two second-generation daughter, who are sisters, then that would mean that if the other two brothers marry the first-generation daughter from the original father, three generations earlier, then we're going to have a mother-in-law falling to the sisters, to the brother who married sister one, and we're going to have another mother-in-law falling to the sister, the brother who married sister two, and that's going to give you your mother's sister falling to you in Yibam. Now, we'll do the exact case in a minute. I just want to show you how easy it is to understand the case once you get past the prejudice. So now you'll say, oh yeah, but what are the details? What are the details? That'll take us 5 minutes to explain. But the principle is clear. You can have multiple generations of sisters, and there's no problem of there being sisters, despite the fact that this means that they had to have generated sisters from the same husband. That's what's important to remember. So here is the case that Rashi gives us, and I'll use the names that Rashi talks about, okay? Instead of our going through the actual words of the Rashi, it's very hard for me to focus on the words and then go back and forth to look at you, unfortunately. So here's the case that Rashi talks about and the names of what he uses so that you can review it in the Rashi, right? Smack bang in the middle of the big Rashi, okay? So Kalev marries two women. And Rashi uses the actual names of the wife of Kalev, you'll remember, who we learned out is really the same woman because that's Miriam, but we'll ignore that. It's not meant to be literal, okay? It's not the original Kalev. So Kalev marries two women. The names that are given in the Tanakh is Chel'ah and Na'arah. Okay. He has one daughter from Chel'ah and one daughter from Na'arah that Rashi doesn't name. So let's call that daughter A and daughter B, because that's going to be from generation A. So these two daughters are actually sisters because they have a common father, Kalev. They're only sisters from the father. They're not sisters from the mother. Okay? So woman A and woman B are sisters. Now, Kalev dies. And a new guy that Rashi calls Yachtzael, it's the next generation. Yachtzael, now he marries, he's a stranger. He goes ahead and he marries the same Chel'ah and Na'arah. Now he also has one daughter from Chel'ah and one daughter from Na'arah. So this means that Chel'ah and Na'arah both have two daughters. One from Kalev, a piece, and one from Yachtzael, a piece, right? We'll call that daughter one and daughter two, as opposed to daughter A and daughter B, because these are daughters from the second marriage to Yachtzael. So we'll call them second generation daughters. Fine. Then we have our standard four brothers, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. So what happens is that Levi goes ahead and marries daughter A. Yehuda, this is all the case that Rashi gives. Levi marries daughter A, and that was the daughter of Kalev and Chel'ah. And Yehuda goes ahead and marries daughter B. That was the daughter of Kalev and Na'arah. Meanwhile, however, Reuven and Shimon have been born from the same person who married daughters one and two. And guess who that was? Yaakov, of course, the father of Reuven and Shimon. So Yaakov went ahead and married daughter one, who was Yachtzael and Chel'ah's daughter. And he also married Yachtzael and Na'arah's daughter. What? How could he do that? Aren't they sisters? Yes, they are. One of them died, and then he married the other one. That's not a problem. Okay, so then Yaakov, here, the father of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, had married these two daughters. And guess what? From daughter one, he had a boy called Reuven. And from daughter two, he had a boy called Shimon. Huh. Interesting. Now, what happens is that if Yehuda and Levi, who are married to daughter A and B, if they end up dying, then that means that what happens is that their mother-in-law of one of them, remember, let's say Levi had married, we said, the case in Rashi, had married daughter A, and Yehuda had married daughter B, and Yaakov had married both daughter one and daughter two, except from one of those daughters, he had a son of Reuven, from the other ones, he had a son of Shimon. So now these brothers are related, of course, through a father, which brings them to Yibam. So what happens is that now daughter A is going to fall to Reuven, right? Okay, so daughter A goes ahead and falls to Reuven, who is a brother of Levi. But what that means is that he is going to there find himself faced with one of two sisters. The two brothers, Levi and Yehuda, both die, leaving these two sisters. Who are these sisters? These are the sisters that were the daughter of Kalev, one from Chel'ah and one from Na'arah, daughters A and B. These daughters are going to be to Reuven a mother's sister. Because remember that Reuven was born from Yaakov's marriage to daughter one. And Shimon was born from Yaakov's marriage to daughter two. But daughter one and daughter two are sisters. They're not only sisters to each other, they are sisters to the original two daughters, A and B, you see, because they are related through Chel'ah. Kolev had the first two daughters. Fine, that's a different father. But Chel'ah and Na'ara, the same woman they always were. So when they went ahead and married Yachzel and had another two daughters, that Yaakov ends up marrying one after the other, they're still the same sisters they always were. And the first two sisters are still the same sisters they always were, because they are daughters A and B, who are sisters to daughter 1 and 2. Not from the same father, of course. One comes from Kolev, and one generation comes from Yachzel, I understand. But they both generations come from the same mothers, Chela and Na'ara, each one of whom had two daughters, one from Kalev and one from Yachzel. So now you've got two sisters are falling to two brothers, because the brothers of Reuven and Shimon are two brothers that were born from the same Yaakov who had married sisters 1 and 2. Okay, so now what happens is that if Levi dies, he's married to the A and B sisters, but the A and B sisters are also the 1 and 2 sisters. So therefore, what's going to happen now is that the perfectly normal marriage of Levi to the daughter of Kolev and Chel'ah is now going to throw a mother's sister to Reuven, who is a son of Yaakov and one of the daughters, right? Remember, Yaakov married the two daughters, 1 and 2. So now there is a son to those two daughters. That son's name we gave as Reuven. But when Levi dies, the other woman that everybody forgot, which was daughter A, is now suddenly falling to Reuven. But daughter A is the sister of daughter 1, who was the mother of Reuven. Now, at the same time, Yehuda dies. Yehuda is married to daughter B, Kolev's daughter from Na'ara. But he is now has no problem in marrying her. They're not related in any way. But his brother Shimon is now in big trouble, because Shimon was the son of Yaakov and the daughter of Na'ara from Yachzel, who is still the sister of the daughter of Na'ara from Kolev. This is woman B and woman 2. They're still sisters, even though we sort of forgot that in the complexities of how many people ended up marrying these people. But it's really quite simple. So you can have a woman that is a sister to someone that she totally forgot existed. And now it turns out that when Yehuda, who was married to this far-off sister, who's just as much sister as anybody else, from the same father, which is Kolev, because he had these two girls, A and B, from Chela and Na'ara. So now he is going to be faced with, Shimon is going to be faced with his mother's sister, because Shimon was also a son of Yaakov and woman 2. But woman 2 is sister to woman B from the same mother, because they both are mothers who were called Na'ara. Okay, so once we get this case, you could see easily how the achot of your mother will fall to one brother of your family, and the other achot of the other brother's mother will fall to the other brother of your family, and there's absolutely nothing strange about it. It only seemed strange because we hadn't expanded our mind to include multiple marriages that provide different sisters in, so to speak, different generations, who can now share a common father with a brother that had been married to one of those sisters and dies, leaving your mother's sister to you for Yibum. Ah! Now, once you get this case, basically, you can have a Tziur HaSeichel, in the Ritva's words, you can have a Tziur HaSeichel for any of these cases. And therefore, says the Ritva, let's not bother, please. All right? That's such a beautiful Ritva, you know. Rashi does a wonderful job, but anyone with a brain in his head just uses a picture in his mind. Tziur HaSeichel. Okay? Even if you have a picture written on a piece of paper, That doesn't make it clearer. That makes it less clear, because that's nowhere near as powerful as a picture in your mind. And then you have to go through each step and figure out, oh, wait a minute, what is that? Oh, yeah, yeah, that means this and that means that and so on. Forget it. Once you learn to do this little trick of iconization, you may not be able to explain it to anyone else rapidly, unless you can sort of beam it up, you know, like in the Matrix, then it would be easy. But you can certainly explain it to yourself easy, right? Okay, Rashi, who didn't have the benefit of the Matrix, had to go through the stages, but the Ritva says, listen, you could always use the Matrix. All right. So therefore, we can now get a move on into the real issue of our sugya. And that's what we have, and that's what we have to deal with now. So we understand that any of these cases could happen. Now, the problem is we have multiple approaches to how we're supposed to understand Bikulam Anikori Behem. And we have three different ways of understanding that. Rav Yehuda, not to be confused with the Rabbi Yehuda that argues with the Rabbanan, the Amora Rav Yehuda, he said, I mean, yes, I understand that Rav said that, and Rav Yehuda, I quoted Rav. And however, I do not believe that Rav meant to say that literally all 15 cases of the Mishnah are meant to be included in this rule of shtei achayot and asurot lezeh, asurot lezeh, because it really would only work from the seventh case on. The seventh case on is mother-in-law. That was chamoto. Remember, we even asked, why not start with chamoto? But I don't think that the first six cases, which is your daughter, your daughter's daughter, your son's daughter, your wife's daughter, your wife's daughter's daughter, your wife's son's daughter, those cases are not meant to be included. Because, as we showed, the only way that those cases come up is where we're talking about an out-of-marriage birth, right? So it's what we call anusato. And since we call anusato, we don't refer to rape victims in the Mishnah. We're referring to normal cases. We're not talking about rape. So we're talking about, in this case, given to be Toba onasin mashkacha, we can only find the cases of your daughter if the other brother is able to marry the same person that ends up falling to Yibum, and this is going to be the wife of the father. That's impossible. It would have to be the out of marriage relationship with your father. Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about only nisuin. And since b'nisuin lo mashkachat lo, b'nisuin kamayre, b'onasin lo kamayre. Now, Rashi understands this to mean that according to Rav Yehuda, our Mishnah is dealing preferentially with cases that do not involve onasim. And therefore, they're not talking about your daughter. Now, this is Rashi's approach, which is very problematic because, as we know, Rashi himself explained the Mishnah specifically referring to Bito Mianusato. And the Gemara does the same thing, because the Gemara says maybe the reason that we put Bito first is because it comes from a drasha. But Bito Miishto doesn't come from a drasha. Only Bito Mianusato comes from a drasha. So what the heck does Rashi say that Rav Yehuda is claiming that the Mishnah is not talking about Onatsim? So therefore, all the other Rishonim argue with Rashi. And they say, no, he doesn't mean the Mishnah is not talking about Onasin. He meant that Rav and Rabbi Chiya's Brisa were not talking about Onasin. And when they said you could find it in all of the cases, they weren't discussing these wild cases of all of these multiple rapes and so on. What do you think? We're in Megillas Esther here. So therefore, they did not include that case. Now, what is, in fact, the explanation? So the Ritva says, look, the explanation, you're right, Rashi seems to be contradicting himself in the earlier Gemara. But the earlier Gemara was the way that we take the Mishnah. If Rav Yehuda takes the Mishnah otherwise, and he wants to learn that the Mishnah is going to separate out the Isser of Bito, even though it's only separated out if it's Anusato, because otherwise it's also your mother's wife, fine, that's Rav Yehuda's business. I mean, that's a different take on the Mishnah. And Rashi is saying, according to Rav Yehuda, he understands that we're not going to be talking about Bito Mianusato. What's so bad about that? Okay, doesn't matter. But the point is, what concerns us is what we're going to get to here. And therefore, Rav Yehuda has got his approach. Abaye has got his approach. Abaye says, I disagree. I say Bito is included, even though it's Mi'anu Soto. Is there such a case or is there not? There's such a case. So given the Ashkechei Mashkachas law, you can find the case. What do I give a hang, whether it's through marriage, whether it's through rape? I don't understand. Where do these hang-ups come from? We're talking about counting genetics. We're not talking about the process that gets those genes into a particular woman. It's none of my business. So the bottom line is, genetically speaking, do we have such a case? Fine. So what's the problem? So let it be. Eboy min anisui, eboy min anisui. I don't care how these germ cells got together. The point is that we do have such a case. Is there a case of Bito? Yes. But, says Abaye, even though I disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, I also believe that Rabbi Chiya in the Braita and Rav was not referring to all of the cases, because Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, that could not appear in this case, because it would only be true according to Rabbi Shimon. So, L'Rabbi Shimon, Hu D'Meshkachas Lo, we can only find the case Aliba the Rabbi Shimon. We cannot find this case Aliba the Rabbonan. And since that's true, there is no way for us to have this Mishnah be working, this Brice of Rabbi Chiya, be working out according to every case, because we are not talking about Plukta. Now, this requires us once again to think. How do we have the case of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo? Remember that according to Rabbi Shimon, we just defined at the beginning of the Amud, we just defined that according to Rabbi Shimon, it is possible for Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo to actually be a case where the Yibum took place first and then the brother was born. That brother is not going to be Otzer on that Yavama, because he was introduced to you. Welcome to the world, baby Levi. And once he was introduced by his sister-in-law, who is his currently living brother Shimon, so then he doesn't know anything from his pre-birth history. She is his brother Shimon's wife, and if Shimon dies, he is going to be Miyabimer. That was Rabbi Shimon's case. Once that's true, once again, let's think about the icon. Is it possible to have a case where one brother is an Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo to one of the brothers, one brother's wife, and the other brother's wife is possible to be an Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo to the another brother, but not to the one brother? Is that possible? According to Rabbi Shimon, of course, it's possible. Because if one of the brothers, Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, was born before the Yibum took place of an older brother, and the other one was born afterwards, but before the Yibum took place of another brother who had died, so then that woman would be Asura to him, but would be Mutter to the brother who was born a little later, because he was born after the Yibum had already been taking place to another, right? Okay, so now we have a vision in which it's possible, but only Aliba Rabbi Shimon, to be an Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo only to one brother and not to the other brother. Because to one of the brothers, little baby Levi was born before the Yibam took place, and little brother Yisachar was born before the Yibam to another brother took place, but that would only be an Eshet Achiv to him. Okay? So therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, as we're going to see, we have a simple simon. And the simple simon is that it is mate, nolad, v'yibem, mate, nolad, v'yibem. So we have basically two separate situations over here. So let's imagine, once again, we've got four brothers, our standard four brothers. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Okay, these are all the sons of Yaakov. Now, two sisters. We're talking about two sisters? Yep. It's always the two sisters that were married to the two older brothers. So Reuven and Shimon marry these two sisters. Now Reuven dies childless. And after he dies, a new brother is born to Yaakov, whose name is Yisachar. And he's born into a world in which, welcome, baby Yisachar. I used to be married to your brother Reuven. Who are you married to now? Says little infant Yisachar. I'm waiting for Yibum, said she. Oh, so I guess I will always be usher to you, because you are an Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olama. You are a very smart boy, infant Yisachar. I noticed that you're missing that little mark that the Malach is supposed to give you when you come out. Let me do it to you. Pooh, you big shot. Okay, so that is the first brother. This is baby Yisachar. Okay, so she's usher forever. Now, Levi, who was at the mitzvah to do Yibum, he goes ahead and he gives the Yibum. Now, brother Shimon was married to the other sister. He dies after that, and then baby Zvulun is born. And baby Zvulun is introduced to the other sister, who is Shimon's wife, and she says, "Welcome to the world, baby Zvulun." And baby Zvulun says, "And who are you?" And she says, "I used to be married to your deceased brother Shimon that you never met." "Oh, good heavens, that means you will always be Asura to me." "Yes, big shot, pow." Okay, so now we have basically the situation. And then Yehuda goes ahead and he does his Yibum. And now Levi and Yehuda, who did the two Yibums, now die. And the two sisters fall to baby Yisachar, who is now 40 years old, and baby Zvulun, who is now 39 years old. So one of them is a surah to one brother, and the other one is a surah to the other brother. So that is only true. Remember, it's simple now that we have the icons, but that's only true according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that there is a difference between being born while the Yavama is still in a status of waiting for Yibum or being born after Yibum. But that's only Rabbi Shimon's opinion. According to the Rabbana, no such case could exist, because they say Eish Zachim Shelo Ba'olamo is irrelevant where it is in history that the baby was born, so then there can't be any difference between baby Zvulun and baby Yisachar. So the whole case breaks down. Therefore, says Abaye, I do not believe that the 15 women listed in the Mishnah would all be able to fit into that story of Arba Achim Nesuim L'Shtei Achyot and Bikulam Anikore Asur L'Zeh, Asur L'Zeh, Mutar L'Zeh, and so on. That would not apply. Rav never meant it to apply to this case of Eshet Achim Shelo Haya Ba'olama. Why? Because it only works out according to Rabbi Shimon. So kiven to Rabbi Shimon, who the Mashkach Hasla, and not according to Rabbonan, we are not talking about cases of Machlokas. Approach number three. Rav Safra says, no. It applies even to the case of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, and it would take place if we've got six brothers, as we just explained, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, baby Yisachar, and baby Zevulun. It's the six brothers. It works out according to Rabbi Shimon. And as I mentioned before, you have to remember the simon. The simon is dies first, baby born, then the Yibum, then the next brother dies, new baby born, and then comes the Yibum. And that would be the case that we just explained. So now it works out in all cases. We have three approaches. Now, the problem is that since Rabbi Chiya is very much its top Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, correct? Everything that Rabbi Chiya said, all of the brises of Rabbi Chiya, they were all there to explain his Rebbe's Mishnayos, right? This was a brise of Achein Tani Rabbi Chiya. And Tani Rabbi Chiya, according to Rav Safra, is referring to a machlokes. And since Rabbi Chiya was referring to a case of a machlokes, which only works out according to Rabbi Shimon, then why did Rabbi say that the Mishnah does not deal with cases that are machlokes in, since all of the cases of the Mishnah are meant, according to Rabbi Chiya, to fall under the category of Arba Achin, Shnai Mem Nesuim, Shnei Achiyot, Hamuteret Lezeh, Asur Lezeh. That would only be in the case of a complex machlokas. Well, okay, the answer is that Rebbe actually did not agree with the way that Rabbi Chiya put it. The way that Rabbi Chiya put it was that the first Mishnah, Baruch Avram, the first Mishnah incorporates a extension of the original Mishnah. The Mishnah of Arba Achim, says Rabbi Chiya, is meant to be an expansion of the cases that are mentioned in the opening Mishnah of the Masechet. Rebbe does not hold it to that. Rebbe says you can ex post facto put those cases in, but they are not the structure of the Mishnah. And therefore, I disagree, and I say that the Mishnah is not a reference to the cases of the Machlokasin. That's why I said Levi's off the wall. Now, Rav Ada Karchina, Tamez the Rivkana, stated that actually Rava said, you don't have to say that there's a difference between Rebbe and Rebbe Chiya. Rebbe does hold of Rebbe Chiya. Why did he say Levi doesn't have any brains? Because he was thinking like this. The case of a mother who was a Anusat Aviv, right? And that's the case that Levi wanted to add. Only one of the rules of Rebbe Chiya would apply. But you can't have both of them together. Just this piece, gentlemen, and it will all be clear, but also the insanity of the level of intelligence that Rebbe is demanding over here is absolutely insane. I mean, really, you know, it's like he's talking to a supercomputer, and because you couldn't figure out 40 steps down the line, therefore you tell him, boy, you ought to be a first generation Microsoft computer, right? Which is basically what he would, okay? So here is the reason. Rebbe holds of these klolim, but what he meant when he yelled at Levi and said, you're an idiot, is because what Rebbe Chiya said was that both of the rules that are mentioned, Bekulan ani korei behem, shtei achayot that are nesuot l'shnei achim, plus asur l'ze muteret l'ze, that cannot happen in one of the cases. And that's the case that you want to add. And I'm explaining to you, you idiot, that if you would add that case, then you would cause a breakdown in symmetry. Because the symmetry is that all of these cases will fit into the Mishnah of the four brothers, two of them being married to two sisters, and nonetheless, they're not ending up being a problem of Achot Zkukato. Let me explain to you why that's true. Only one rule can happen, but both rules can't happen at the same time. Betarte lo mashkachasla, right? Because what we're talking about is daddy rapes two different women. Each of them has a son. Then these women that he raped marry two other sons who are all brothers from that father, correct? That gives us the case of four brothers who are married, two of whom are married to two sisters, okay? And then they can fall to Yibum. Yes, that's true. So these women, they marry two other sons, standard case, they die without children, everything is fine so far. But consider, let's call the rapist Yaakov, okay? So now Yaakov went ahead and he rapes two sisters. Okay, so then what's going to happen then? If Yaakov rapes two sisters, then it can still work out to say that achota shehi yevimta will actually be true. There can be an achota who is yevimta. Yevimta means she is a sister-in-law. By the way, in Lashon HaKodesh, we have a very clear distinction between types of sister-in-laws, because a yevimta is the woman who is married to the other brother. And in this case, the woman married to the other brother, she is called yevimta. And if she is a sister, so we can find the case either where a sister who is yevimta is married to the other brother. But then it will not be ever true that ha'asura l'zeh muteret l'zeh. There is no possible way for the one who is mutter to one to be usher to the other one. You can't not have that situation. Okay? So if we're talking about Yaakov, who now rapes woman A and woman B, and then these two women, A and B, marry Reuven and Shimon. And then Yaakov actually this his rape victim ends up marrying the son that he fathered, right? The other one, each one, will, one of these two women is going to end up, one has the son Levi and one has the same, the son Yehuda. And now Shimon and Reuven, they go ahead and they marry the original two rape victims. So then the woman A is going to fall to Levi, who is the son of this rape victim in Yaakov. And woman B is going to fall to Yehuda, the brother of Shimon, who married her, because you're allowed to marry your father's rape victim. But then the mother, who Shimon married, is going to fall to Yehuda, who is fathered by Yaakov and this rape victim, woman A. And therefore, how will you ever have a case that she's muteret to the other one? Why would she be muteret to the other one? You can't have both things to be true. So if these two women aren't sisters, then it's true that the other one will be usher to one, but mut to the other, because she's not his mother's sister. But if they are sisters, then it will be his mother's sister. So either you're going to have the problem that they're not sisters, and therefore that part of the rule doesn't fall into place, or you'll have the problem of they're not being muteret to either, because one of them it's a mother, and to the other one it's the mother's sister. So how the heck did you, Levi, think to add a case to the Mishnah that breaks the symmetry of the rules of Rabbi Chiya in the Braita, where you can apply each rule separately, but you cannot apply them concurrently? They can only be applied as separate cases. Boy, are you stupid. Do you understand how many steps Rebbe has expected Levi to take into consideration when he asked this question? You're telling me that we should add a case of a mother, and you're not taking into consideration what this is going to mean across the entire spectrum of how these cases need to fit into the rest of the Masechet, including the rules that apply to the brides of Rabbi Chiya. And you obviously think that these rules are two different things. You can have Achotashi Yevimta, or you could have Amuteret Lazah Asur Lazah. That's stupid. You have to have Akotashi Yevimta, which is Asur Lazah Muteret Lazah. And the moment that you think about this case in your damaged brain, you would have understood that, of course, that would mean only one or the other is true, because you're faced either with your mother or your mother's sister. And if they're not sisters, then you don't have Shtei Achayot Nisuot B'Shnei Achim. You didn't think of that before you asked the question?
Means you're missing what evolution gave man to anticipate situations even before they didn't happen. It's specifically Moach B'Kat Kedcha, right? You're not acting human.
Okay, but this is a human supercomputer, right? So, therefore, you should have thought about it. Hochi Karmale, what he's telling to Levi is, why didn't you use your brains? My time alo dayakta masnisa. Why didn't you look at the language that the Matznisin, anyway, is going according to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda asers anusat aviv. Okay, that we're going to look at later on.